Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 2, Episode 104. Dave, big sigh of relief. We got this podcast out on Sunday, our one-hour draft recap, so hopefully everybody's had a chance to get caught up on our thoughts on the draft. Today, a little bit of a different format. You had a nice interview with John Linder of WQAM in Miami earlier in the week, talking about mostly about Shane Spence. The Steelers' third-round pick who went to the U, and John is a Hurricanes Radio Network guy, so he's familiar with him. And also, we had a chance, we got followed on the Terrible Podcast on Twitter by Kelvin Beecham Jr., the Steelers' draft choice out of SMU. And unfortunately, I wasn't available last night, but you got a chance to spend a few minutes talking to him as well.
Most definitely. He's a good kid. And if anybody had heard the conference call following his selection on Steelers.com, he's a yes sir, no sir type kid. And let me tell you, this kid is excited. He admits that he doesn't realize the magnitude of what just happened to him. He talks about his pre-draft visit to Pittsburgh, seeing the Lombardi trophies, and we discuss what happened at that pre-draft visit. So that's kind of fun there. And this kid just wants to play football. He understands what the Pittsburgh Steelers organization is about, and he made for a great interview.
Yeah, and Kelvin, thanks for following us on the Terrible Podcast. As is our rule, we are going to unfollow you now, since you can follow us both on Twitter. You can follow Dave at Steelers Depot and me at Hammer Speaks, because Steelers.com is the only follow we give on that one. But great for getting in touch with us, and thanks for giving Dave the interview. So that'll come up on the backside of this. Dave and I are going to spend about 15 to 20 minutes getting you up to speed on what's gone on the past couple days since the draft. Obviously, not a lot of news. And I'll give you a plug today. If you get a chance, 4 to 7, I'll be on the Joe Bendel Show, as I will for the rest of the week. And I am going to have three beat writers from the AFC North, guys who have been guests on the Terrible Podcast in the past, and we're going to get into in-depth breakdowns of each of their drafts. So if you get a chance to listen to ESPN 970, I'll be on there today and the rest of the week. So, Dave, let's get into the first thing that I think is most impactful for the Steelers, and you put a nice blog post up on SteelersDepot.com, as always, and I think it recaps the whole thing in a nice little bow. But the Steeler rookie cap number came out, and why don't you just take us through the nuts and bolts of how that's going to work?
Yeah, as everybody probably knows, with the new CBA, everything's pretty much slotted as far as these draft picks go. There's not that much increase in the overall rookie pool, of course, because the salary cap did not go up and all. So everything's going to parallel last year pretty close as far as those numbers go. And I think the increase was something they're predicting like 0.187, minute. So we're able to kind of parallel make some guesses off of that. The Steelers draft picks will translate into a $5.13 million rookie pool. And all those rookies signed, the value of their contracts cannot exceed $28.25 million. Now, that's the entire value of all nine draft picks, the entire value of each of their contracts overall, not just the 2012 year, is where that $28.25 million comes into play here. Also with the CBA, here's one thing too. You know, the Steelers used to like to sign their first-round draft pick to a five-year deal, their second-round draft pick to a four-year deal, and everybody else were three-year deals. Well, the CBA now says that all players drafted must be four-year deals, as far as that goes. Now, the first-round draft picks can include a fifth-round option, and that's what's going to happen. Well, that's what happened last year with Cameron Hayward. That's what will happen this year with David DeCastro. So one thing that people get caught up in also, David, is this rookie pool is like a cap within a cap. It has no real dollar-to-dollar correlation as far as the overall salary cap picture. So they must work this $5.13 million number with the draft picks only. But that you know, it doesn't correlate with the salary cap because of the rule of 51 number when you're dealing with the 51 top salaries. So just because you have a $5.13 million rookie pool number, that does not mean you need $5.13 million in overall salary cap space to accommodate these things when you look at displacement and you look at how the salaries fit in on the rule of 51. So I hope that kind of makes sense there. With the Cameron Hayward contract last year was 4 years, $6.7 million. That included a $3.37 million signing bonus. He, of course, was the 30th overall pick in a draft. This year we're dealing with the 24th overall pick in a draft. And last year that was Cameron Jordan from the Saints, and his contract came in 4 years, $7.73 million with a $4.12 million signing bonus. So DeCastro is going to be right around what Jordan is, I suspect, a guess off the top of my head. His total deal will come in about 4 years, $8 million, and carry roughly a $1.5 million or so cap hit along with it.
Dave, great job. That's exactly the breakdown. Each team has the amount allocated based on the number of draft picks they had and where those draft picks were taken. So, different teams will have different numbers and have to work through this, but everybody's basically working from the same framework. So that'll set that up. Dave, the other thing that we had, and I appreciated your appearance on my show yesterday. Good stuff as always. We had a chance yesterday to talk about this, but we haven't talked about it on the Terrible Podcast. Ben was speaking with Mike Prezzuto on the DVE morning show, and he talked about Todd Haley and his new playbook. And it's pretty funny stuff. And, all this stuff is pretty relaxed, so we don't want to make too much of it. But Ben was talking about the rookies, particularly the offensive linemen, and pleased he was to have those guys come in. There's a funny story about Ben calling DeCastro and welcoming him to the team, and DeCastro thinking that it's the travel planner, and he's asking Ben about his flight plans. So that was a funny story. And then, Ben was defending is maybe not the right word, but Ben was talking very highly of the guys in the room as they stand right now, the offensive linemen who are part of the team, and saying just because you're drafted as a highly picked rookie, you don't just get to come in and start, and it's important to kind of see how you fit in and learn from the other guys. And, that's the right thing to say. It's all good stuff, and not all of it was meant and well-intentioned in the right way. So I don't think there's any news there, but it was kind of funny. He talked about sneaking around the training facility and going into the rooms and looking at the boards and the X's and O's to glean something about the offensive playbook because they haven't been able to have contact with Haley yet. And those playbooks will be given out to the offense this week. And he talked about maybe picking something up and looking at it, basically calling the playbook the Rosetta Stone, which I think was all meant tongue-in-cheek. And we know that Haley's going to have – the offensive line's going to have the same verbiage, but it's going to be different for everybody else. So Ben and the receivers are going to have to learn a new book. But, some people thought Ben was, again, kind of just not making things simple. Dave, did you have any take on that?
It was just Ben, he can't help himself sometimes to make these kind of jabs. And listen, he made his thoughts known, after Haley was hired that, he really was hoping things, verbiage and a lot of things didn't change because of, he was worried. He claimed that he was more worried how it would affect the rookies and all the younger people on the roster. And, that's a good argument and all. Basically, though, this has just been said, hey, I don't want to have to learn anything else. And, Todd Haley's going to put his stamp on this offense. And it was hard to imagine a lot of things staying the same because even Bruce Arians, when he took over for Ken Wisenhunt, they kept a lot of the stuff that Ken did and then added on to it. So basically you've had a playbook that's kind of not really evolved, over the years underneath both those offensive coordinators. It's kind of been stacked onto each other, and with good reason, as Ben was a young quarterback, not having him have to learn a lot of new stuff in his early years and all like that. But now Ben, Ben understands offenses and all like that. He's been in the league long enough and all now. So Todd Haley's pretty much, it sounds like Todd Haley's pretty much scrapping a lot of everything. Now, of course, they're going to still run the basic Steelers staples, the double, 22 double and the counter pike. And, some of those things are just basics in every playbook and more particularly with the Steelers playbook. But it sounds like there's going to be a lot more verbiage in there. And perhaps Todd Haley will have to give out some sort of Cliff Notes or a Rosetta Stone or a Dakota ring or something to go along with this. And yeah, it's just been making a kind of a cute little jab there about the playbook.
Yeah, so, you know, now it's quiet time for the Steelers. The rookies will be in for this weekend. They'll have their first interaction with the club this weekend, and then we'll get the OTAs coming up shortly in May. And, you know, that'll happen on a couple different occasions. And then things will get quiet in June. And, Dave, I know kind of June, if there's a month, to take off, it's kind of June and July is when things get quiet. We've seen a few NFL moves today as teams pair their roster and figure out how they're going to deal with this money. Jabbar Gaffney, who we talked about when the Redskins went out and signed a bunch of receivers, you knew he was going to get cut sooner or later. I'm not quite sure why they waited until now to do it, but he got cut here today, released by the Redskins. And I'm sure there'll be a couple other pieces of news. And as I talked about, there's a chance Jonathan Scott doesn't make it to camp with the Steelers. But by and large, with the free agent signings and what the obviously the draft, the Steelers know who they're going to have now. There are a couple pieces out there, but the Mike Wallace watch is over. Everything else is generally over, and the Steelers know who they're going to bring to camp.
Yeah, they do. Now, Tomlin made a point, I think, in the post-draft press conference to say, you know, they might still look at bargain free agents that are out there. I really wouldn't expect anybody to be signed at this point, to be honest with you. Maybe a camp body here or there as we go forward. But yeah, I'm with you, David. They're pretty much set. And when you kind of look at the numbers, I think there's 93 actually players listed on a Steelers roster right now. And I'm not sure how, if they give exclusions to maybe players that are injured or whatnot. I would kind of think maybe that we could see maybe a corresponding move of about three players here over the next, whenever these contracts become official and all these undrafted kids get in and get signed this next weekend and all. So is Jonathan Scott going to be one of those guys? He very well could be with that. You're going to save $2 million plus, as we've talked about there, as far as salary cap number goes there. So I would look for a few kind of, corresponding moves as soon as these kids get in there and sign those contracts.
Yeah, I think that's right. And, there's a chance that some of the guys that they signed in the offseason to some of these futures contracts or whatever may get released as well. So
sure,
we'll see who the names are when they get down to this 90-man limit and go from there.
Do you like the 90-man limit, or do you wish they would have kept it at 80?
I don't know that 90-man does you a lot of good. I think you're going to pair these guys pretty quickly, but I'm all for guys having a job for 3 months in the summer or whatever if they get a couple bucks and it's more guys to work out with and have catch the ball and throw the ball. I don't have any problem with it. I think it's a non-event.
Yeah, the only thing, I wish they'd make a first cut down kind of quicker, but evidently – it's going to stay. I think it's after the second week that they trim down on those and all. It just, those first preseason games or whatnot, even though I love watching them, I love charting them and all like that, that's a lot of players to keep up with.
That is a lot of names and a lot of guys to keep up with. Dave, let's just take a quick look around the division at what happened. Cincinnati, in terms of the draft, Cincinnati, Drake Kirkpatrick and Kevin Zeitler in the first round. They get the local kid, Devin Still, in the second round, and they got Mohamed Sanu, the receiver from Rutgers, and Brandon Thompson, a DT from Clemson. And then they got Orson Charles, a tight end from Georgia, in the fourth round. People generally look at this draft, at what the Bengals did, and think they did a really good job. It's interesting they traded back from 21 to, I think, 27 to get Zeitler, and maybe they had him rated pretty close to DeCastro, and they got the extra third-round pick, and they were able to add Brandon Thompson after losing two D linemen in the offseason.
Yeah, they did. When you compare them to the Steelers, they're right there as far as probably draft grades and go, and heck, George Ioka, the free safety out of Boise State, this is a guy that a lot of people thought might be going I think round four, round three, something like that. So I think they got good value there. Orson Charles, he was the guy that had that DUI on him, I believe. This guy will pair along good with their other tight end there, Gresham, and give him some depth there and another body on the line there. And you mentioned both the defensive tackles, Brandon Thompson and Devin Steele out of Penn State there. Hey, it's hard to argue with what they did in this draft there, and they added a lot of bodies. They're getting younger. They've got their quarterback now. They've got a top-notch wide receiver there. Good draft for them.
Yeah, I agree. I think Cincinnati did a really good job, and they've had a good offseason. If we go a little bit north and a little bit east of Cincinnati, we end up in Cleveland, unfortunately.
I can smell it.
Cleveland, we talked a little bit about the Brandon Whedon move. I'm just on record as them not handling this whole situation well. Having said that, they added a fair bit of talent last year, and they had a lot of picks this year. They had 11 picks. Now, they added some guys that, you know, we don't know a lot about, but obviously Trent Richardson's going to be their bell cow back. He is going to be a three-down back. He's going to take over for Peyton Hillis, and so they've got their go-to guy, they hope, I'm sure, for the next 5 or 6 years. Mitchell Schwartz is a guy the Steelers had in, a tackle. James Michael Johnson, I know you had some interest in him, a linebacker out of Nevada. I think the whole AFC North did pretty well, and depending on what you think of Brandon Whedon, if we took him out of the equation, I think they had a pretty nice draft. And I'll just go ahead and say one more time that I think they screwed up big time with Whedon at 22.
Yeah, can you imagine adding the guard to Castro there? I don't know. I don't understand that. I mean, Trent Richardson, I understand that move to go up and get there. Mitchell Schwartz, this guy is going to kick inside there for him more than likely, and that you'll probably have some ability to play outside at tackle if injury comes about there. James Michael Johnson, I like the kid. After the Steelers draft started unfolding the way it did, I thought maybe this be a kid in the fourth round or something like that for them. Manuel Acho has a good bloodline. Of course, his brother plays already in the NFL, drafted, I think, last year. Brandon Whedon pick, you know, that aside, if you throw that out, like you said, yeah, I guess I graded about a C, B plus, C.
I'd give him a B minus. If even with the Whedon pick, I mean, I think if they take DeCastro there, I'd give him a B plus. I think Colt McCoy's not a bad quarterback, and I'm not sure Brandon Whedon brings you a big upgrade there. So, but look, it's there. You know, they're on the line for it now. We'll see what happens there. God bless him. I hope it doesn't work out at all.
Me either. That John Hughes kid, the defensive tackle out of Cincinnati, I think. A lot of what I saw on him, he's supposed to go a little bit later and all, but so I'm not sure if that's a reach. Of course, it's not a reach according to them, but when you look at kind of his grade out scores and all like that, I almost wonder if they could have got somebody else there and gotten, if he was on the main target on their board, could have got him a little bit later. Of course, he's a Cincinnati boy. They probably know a lot about him being in the state of Ohio there, but okay.
All right, and last but not least, we go to the East, and we got the Ravens. They did, kudos to them. They did something smart in the first round. They got out of the first round and got the guy they wanted anyway, a bunch of picks later. So, and they got a fourth rounder out of that. Courtney Upshaw goes there. Osamele's a guy who, a little bit up and down at his time at Iowa State. We'll see what happens. But I think people like Bernard Pierce as an extra back, a guy to spell Ray Rice. And Gino Gradkowski, the local kid from, Seton LaSalle High School, Bruce Gradkowski's brother, played at Delaware. He's a guy who's going to play, maybe step right in at guard and start for them, and probably transition after this season to center and be the guy who replaces Matt Burke. So in trading back, they were able to pick him up. So that trade looks particularly good from that perspective. Some of the guys on the back end I'm not really that familiar with. I guess Tommy Streeter, the wide receiver out of Miami. Some people like him. I'm kind of meh on him. But, I think they had an okay draft, not a great draft, an okay draft.
Yeah, Streeter, I kind of looked at him quite a bit heading into the draft. Definitely a kid with size and some speed. We would just have to see how he does going forward there, and that gives them a big target over there. Because, let's face it, Anquan Boldin, how many years is he into right now? It's not like he's going anywhere, but it gives him another option as far as size there. I like how you broke down the Gradkowski pick there, and because Matt Burke, Father Time's fixing to pass him by here if it hasn't already there, and they definitely needed a guy that they could get groomed to take over center there. Osamele, kind of up and down guy, as you said, kind of saw his stock drop there the more things went on there. So round two, I'm not sure. Maybe that's about right place for him. I think I saw some stuff early three, mid three or whatnot. So overall, Bernard Pierce, I guess, is a guy they think to help alleviate some of the wear and tear on Ray Rice. But I think overall the AFC North, did a good job in the draft, and of course the Steelers draft we've covered, and we really like that as well.
Yeah, I think well said. I do think the AFC North did well pretty much across the board, and I think the league did pretty well. Seattle, there's some question marks, and you certainly can look at individual picks and say, what was this about? What was that about? But as somebody said, maybe the whole league's getting better at this game. So, interesting stuff. Certainly, we saw all the trades with the CBA coming into effect, allowing people to have a lot more cost certainty about what it was going to cost to get certain draft picks at certain levels. And that played a role as well. And I think it was an exciting draft because of that, to see all the action. I know I was driving to Steeler headquarters when the Steelers made that trade in the fourth round. And, you get the blood pressure goes up, and you get excited to see who they're going to get. And they got the guy I think a lot of people are thrilled to have in Alameda Ta'amu. So fun stuff all weekend. Fun stuff, I'm sure, for you as well. And we'll take a little break until Friday. We got a couple days to back it down, and don't expect a lot of activity till then.
Yeah, most definitely. And some listeners have asked about whether or not we're going to have Dave Tay on to go over this draft. David and I are going to probably set him up maybe sometime next week. We'll use Friday to go over some reader questions here.
Yep.
In fact, we got a nice one in just today, and we'll try to make the Friday show go over a lot of reader questions. So if you have them, now's the time to send them over to theterriblepodcast@gmail.com, and we'll try to dedicate a lot of the Friday show to that. Do you agree, David?
Yeah, and just one other thing. Dave and I have had some conversations about possibly monetizing the podcast. It's something that we're hesitant to do in any way in terms of charging, but we would like to get some feedback on that as well. And if you'd like to send us an email, it's probably the best way to do that. We don't need to talk about that on Twitter as much, but if you want to share some thoughts on that, about maybe a small annual charge, or maybe setting up a PayPal account. If you have any comments about it, if you think it's the worst idea in the world, we're happy to hear that as well. So as Dave said, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. We obviously both put a lot of effort and time into this, and just trying to figure out how to make sure it's cost effective for us. So appreciate any feedback you want to give us there. So without further ado, we'll get to Dave's interview. And as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.
Welcome back to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. My co-host David Todd is tied up tonight. I'm pleased to be joined on the phone by Steelers' seventh-round draft pick out of Southern Methodist University. He was a 248th overall selection by the Steelers in the seventh round, the last of their four. Well, let's see. They had four seventh-round picks, and Kelvin was the last. So, Kelvin, welcome to the Terrible Podcast. How you doing?
I'm wonderful, man. Elated to be a Steeler.
I bet you are. Let's start off, first of all, what kind of reception are you starting to realize how big Steeler Nation is right now?
I am, man. I tweeted not too long ago that Steeler Nation reaches a lot of places. I got a call from my aunt who works at the corporate office at TXU, which is a electrical company down this way, and she said, "Kelvin, you need to come up here. There's a man that is big time up here that wants to see you." And I was like, "Well, let me go up there. I need to meet as many Steeler fans as possible." So it stretches far and wide, and I'm happy to be a part of Steeler Nation.
I tell you, it's gonna. I think the further you get into this thing, too, I think you're gonna find what a humongous fan base we have here. Where were you? It had ticking down there in the seventh round and all. Were you watching the draft at that time? Were you were you kind of worried, getting to that undrafted phase there? Take us through the few hours there.
Those few hours were, very hectic and very on the phone a lot from about 4:30 up until the time I got drafted. Was on the phone with a lot of different teams. To tell you the truth, I just got back from Henderson. I haven't really been watching the draft the entire weekend. Just wanted to, just be with my family and spend time with them because I know I won't be able to do that too much longer. But I was driving back from Henderson, Texas, and I just had made it to my home and had talked with my agent and my offensive line coach, Adrian Clem, about some different options that, all the offers that were being presented to me by teams as an undrafted free agent. And as I was crossing off names, man, Mike Tomlin and Phil Crowder called. And, you know, the first thing that Mike Tomlin asked me was, he said, do you have any board meetings or anything you need to go to this Friday? And I was like, no, sir, I don't. He was like, I expect you to be here for minicamp this weekend. I was like, I'll be there. So it was nice, man. You know, I still don't think I understand the magnitude of what has just happened. You know, I just know I'm smiling ear to ear and enjoying every bit of this ride, every bit of this journey.
I bet you are. Now, you started all 52 games in four seasons at SMU at left tackle there. And, you know, a lot of the people are guessing, you know, and according to your conference call with the Steelers that was up on the site and all, you're more than likely, I guess, going to kick inside with some position flexibility at tackle. Is that pretty much correct?
Yes, sir, and also at center. You know, I've been working at center, and I'm smart enough to call, you know, and make the protection calls and then run schemes, all that different things. So I can play every position across the board. And if I've told and assured Mike Tomlin that I can do that, Coach Tomlin that I can do that, and I'm just ready to get to work, man.
I bet you. Now, there's reports out there. I've seen a little film on you, but I didn't check special teams. Did you long snap there?
I didn't, but like I said, I've been working on it. You know, I had, I don't know if you've ever heard of Frank Gans. Frank Gans Sr. was a special teams coach in the National Football League for a long time. And then his son has been at SMU, and they've been, you know, working with me on long snapping. Just being as flexible and giving the team as many options that I could be. As many, you know, many options, giving myself more options to get on the field. And just adding to my value as a draft pick.
And Mike Tomlin always likes to say, the more you can do, the more you can do. So
exactly.
That's good there. Now, Emmanuel Sanders, what kind of relationship do you have with him?
I had a great relationship with him when he was here at SMU. You know, we helped turn his place around. You know, he didn't have a car at the time, so I used to, you know, drive him to practice. And, you know, the relationship and the bond that we had, you know, both people that just work hard for what they want. He was a person that was very involved in campus affairs and wanted to make the lives of student athletes better. And that was a role that I took to another level after he left. And, you know, he's been, you know, corresponding with me during this time that I've been a Steeler. And he said, Kelvin, come in, work, and do what you got to do to get on the field. It's going to be a fun ride. We're trying to win a Super Bowl. He said, we'll hook up when you get in. You know, I'll give you some more advice on just how things roll around here. And, you know, it's a great opportunity to have a former Mustang and now a former Steeler teammate that's also a great friend, you know, alone to help me get acclimated to the great town of Pittsburgh.
Absolutely. Now, you were at the Combine, correct?
Yes, sir, I was.
And you ran, I'm looking at some numbers here, 5.44, I think, on the 40 was one of the times out there. A nice 20-yard shuttle time of about 4.80 is what I'm showing here. And but at your pro day, though, I thought I saw an interview with you that you weren't overly happy with your workout there. Was it just nerves or whatnot? Or, you know, take us through the combine and the pro day.
Well, I've never been a numbers guy. That's just not me. You know, I play football. I wanted to enjoy all the testing and all the combine and the different running tests and the benching tests, but that's just not me. I've never been a person that's been good at those types of things. But as a competitor, you try to find a way to be the best at those types of things, and not having numbers that I'm satisfied with just wasn't sitting well with me. But I knew, you know, I'm just not a good tester. You know, I don't test well at those things. But, you know, you just try to do the best you could. And even though I did my best, it didn't feel like I did the best that I – you know, I mean, as a competitor, you just don't feel that's the best, even though that's what you put out there as your product.
I got you. You can always do better, most definitely,
exactly.
in every situation. Now, did you meet with the Steelers at the Combine?
I did not. The only time I met with them was in the informal interviews that are held in the train station. That was the only time I met with them.
And of course, you made it up to Pittsburgh for a pre-draft visit up there. You were one of the 30 pre-draft visitors. How did that visit go?
That was wonderful, man. You know, I got in, and, you know, I thought I felt a little overdressed. You know, Coach Tomlin told me to take my suit coat off. But, you know, came in and met with Coach Coogs and Todd Haley and Phil Crowder. And just went through some of the running schemes that y'all have there and some of the favorite plays that y'all run. And we're not y'all with that we run. I'm a part of
that's right.
Now.
You're we.
I'm we now. So you know, just got, you know, kind of acclimated to what was going on and just enjoyed it, man. I just soaked it all in, tried my best to do as best as I could to pick up the running schemes as fast as I could, and I think I did a pretty good job because apparently they drafted me. So,
did they put you on the board? Did Coach Coos put you on the board and all?
Well, he had the assistant offensive line coach on the board, and it was look and regurgitate. So, I mean, it was reading what was up on the board, soaking it in, then being able to regurgitate it back to him. You know, he went and pulled up some of my Houston film and asked me what I was doing here, you know, what would we call here, some of our running schemes. And then he would ask the knowledge that I had just previously learned that him and the assistant offensive line coach had given me to be able to talk about what schemes that they ran and how they applied to my scheme at my college. And then we went to some Pittsburgh film, and I had to be able to regurgitate and tell them exactly what was going on in their film. So, you know, for that, you know, hour or two that I was doing that, I mean, I was happy to be doing it again because it's football. It wasn't no testing, wasn't no benching, it wasn't no running. It was just football, stuff that I love to do, watch film, you know, talk football, and you know, I thoroughly enjoyed it.
At SMU, I watched about 40 plays, I guess. Did y'all run a lot of the power, tell me a little bit about, is there a lot of differences between what you ran there and what Steelers run?
I mean, it's the only difference is, you know, they do pull a little bit more than we did, but we at SMU, we had two running plays. Seriously, two running plays. We had a play called Tampa, which was pulling our left guard, double teaming, or deuce block on the play side, and kicking out the defensive end. We ran it to both sides, and we ran it multiple ways, just depending on the defense. And then we had our zone, and we just ran zone and that gap scheme type of run. When I got to Pittsburgh, you know, looking at how things were here and the running scheme here, it was similar, just with different terminology, different verbiage, and, you know, the technique in which we use at Pittsburgh to block that same type of play is just called differently. You know, I think they call it double here, and at SMU we called it Tampa. So different terminology.
And you've got a pretty, you know, you're pretty long-legged, you know, you got a different build to you, too, you know, and I think that's what, with your height and all like that, that allowed you to play left tackle at SMU, because you seem to have good footwork with those long legs, and I think that's probably the attraction of you kicking inside there. Of course, you didn't play guard at SMU, but do you feel comfortable playing inside the phone booth?
I don't have a problem with it, you know. Being out in space a lot really helped me just understand the angles of how pass rushers will rush. And being inside, you know, understanding how they rush just gives me I feel I have advantage on kicking inside because I know how to pass block. But now, coming to the National Football League where we run the ball a ton more, that would be an area that I know I need to continue to work on and to develop. You know, one thing that Coach Coogs and I have already talked about is just becoming a better football player, just, you know, learning, soaking it all in, getting better because, you know, they know that the sky is the limit and I'm just, just raw talent, just waiting to develop. And I understand that and coming in, I'm just ready to compete.
And you're, you know, judging by your tweets and reading some of your background, you're a very Christian man. You talk about you're on the board of directors and all. Tell us a little bit about what you do off the field there.
Off the field, as far as off, you know,
yeah, with your
not
board,
on campus.
Yeah, with your board of directors and all like that.
Oh, we got to talk about all that.
Oh, I mean, we don't have to. I mean, we can say off football.
I do quite a bit, man. Like I talked about, Emmanuel kind of started it, you know, just finding ways to make the experience for African-American athletes a lot better. You know, coming from a small town like Emmanuel, we played each other in high school when we played basketball. So coming from a small town and then coming to SMU, the big town of Dallas, and coming to a predominantly rich white culture, it's a little different. And not all the time student athletes were treated the best and understood how to become successful in that type of environment. So, you know, I tried to come on campus and defy some of the perceptions and stereotypes and connotations for African-American athletes. So I got involved in a lot of different things on campus, you know, like Kevin Coble talked about. I was one of the student representatives to the Board of Trustees. I was a SAC president, which is a Student Athlete Advisory Committee president for my local SAC. I also served on the conference SAC, and I also served on the NCAA Student Athlete Advisory Committee. which convenes in Indianapolis a couple times a year. I was also on the athletics committee for the athletics council. I mean, it was just a lot of stuff. SCA, you know, I'm very involved in my church, Greater Harvest Church of God in Christ down there in Oak Cliff, which is outside of Dallas. I mean, the list goes on and on my bio and resume as far as the size.
You stay very, very busy. What did you think? What did you think about when you? I'm sure they showed you the Lombardi trophies there. What was that feeling like?
Man, that Lombardi trophy. You know, this is how I look at it. When I talk about, you know, I prayed about a team that fit me best. My personality, I aim for excellence. My family, we aim for excellence, and we also a stable family. You know, I think about my grandparents. Both sets of grandparents have been married over 50 years. My parents have been married over 20 years. My dad has owned his own business for over 20 years. We've had the same address in Mahia, Texas for over 20 years. And if you look at the Steelers organization, it's a very stable, a very culture-oriented organization. And they do everything the right way. When you think of Pittsburgh Steelers, you think of excellence. And, you know, I was talking to somebody earlier. I said the Pittsburgh organization is an organization that's looked at as one of the top professional organizations in this side of the hemisphere, and to have that Steeler name associated with my name and being a part of this organization is a privilege that I wouldn't trade anything for. So looking at those trophies, you know, I want to be able to say I added a couple to that trophy case. So like I said, I'm elated. I still don't understand. I still don't think that I understand the magnitude of what's going on, but you know, I'm just ready to get in, ready to be a part of a Super Bowl winning team and do my best to contribute as much as I can.
Kelvin, it sounds like you already understand it. You sound like a Steeler already. You sound like the perfect type of player that the Steelers go after. I can hear it in your voice and all like that. You know, you have not seen the magnitude. Wait till you get to Latrobe for training camp. I think it's going to blow your mind, and I'm going to start sending you some followers on Twitter here, and as soon as your name gets out a little bit more here, I think you're going to get blown away here, and I just want to let you know that we'll be rooting for you here at Steelers Depot and on the Terrible Podcast, and I want you to go up there, and I want you to make the 53-man roster, okay?
Yes, sir. That's the goal. Thank you, sir.
And that's Kelvin Beachum. You can find him on Twitter, Kelvin Beachum Jr., all one word on Twitter, and I'll be posting up here on Twitter. Kelvin, thanks again for joining us, and have a great night.
Hey, you too, man. Be blessed.
Okay, welcome back to the Terrible Podcast. I'm pleased to be joined by John Linder from WQAM. He covers the Miami Hurricanes for the Miami Hurricanes Radio Network. John happens to be, full disclosure here, he happens to be a Steelers fan on top of it, working down in Miami. John, welcome to the Terrible Podcast today.
Thank you very much. It's been one heck of a few days with the draft, and I can't wait to see how the mini camps turn out.
Me either. I think the Steelers had a real good weekend. There's one draft pick in particular that's really got my attention, trying to figure out where he fits in. And, of course, that's Miami Hurricane weak side linebacker Sean Spence. And you covered Sean for several years there in Miami, and also I think at his high school when he was in high school as well too. First of all, you know, tell us about Spence. What type of kid you know, is Spence?
Well, number one, you look at his size, and that's, I guarantee you that Steelers fans are wondering, wow, you know, he's not even quite 6 feet. What are they thinking? Sean Spence has the mentality of a kid who's ready for the National Football League. All he needs is some seasoning and some size, and obviously to know the playbook. This kid is a senior in high school, was a phenom, and he carried it right on through college. And the University of Miami as a team was pretty mediocre in his time here, but it was nothing that had to do with how he played. He was their defense. He played outside when he had to. He played inside when he had to. And the thing that makes Sean Spence special is the thing that makes all the great linebackers in the National Football League special, and that's intuition, instinct, and the ability to get from point A to point B as fast as possible. And to me, you just look at a kid like that, and there are several examples around the league. And around here in Miami, I compare him instinctually to Zach Thomas, a guy who was strong but on the small side, not necessarily a fast linebacker, but his intelligence, his ability to learn plays and get to the football from point A to point B made him a very dangerous and important linebacker. He'll be a Miami Dolphins Hall of Famer for sure. And I look at a guy like Spence, and I think about his potential, his football IQ, and the fact that he is going to a team, and I'm not saying this because I grew up in Squirrel Hill, Shadyside. I'm saying this because it's true. He's going to a team where if the Steelers are drafting you, you're going to do well. Nobody drafts and develops linebackers, the Pittsburgh Steelers. So when I combine his intelligence and his ability to learn fast with what the Steelers have been doing, I can see him being a very good back to Lawrence Timmons for a while, a good special teamer, and then possibly a starter in a few years.
What kind of character does this kid have?
Oh, listen, I'll be honest with you. He's a good kid. He's a smart kid. Of course, involved in the Shapiro investigation last year, apparently. He had some doings with Ben Shapiro. He's in jail right now. He was a Ponzi schemer. He's tried to hold the University of Miami hostage. There were a line of kids who had some involvement with him, whether it was him buying him a couple beers and a pizza or what have you. Spence was on the smaller end of that. He got a one-game suspension last year, and he had to pay back a few hundred dollars because he was treated to some, you know, pool and some beers or something of that nature. But this kid is sharp. He's smart. He's got a captain's mentality. He's a leader, not a follower. And he understands that he made a mistake when he did this. And unfortunately, without going way off the tracks, a lot of these kids felt like they weren't doing anything wrong because some of the coaches were introducing them to this Ponzi schemer. So, you know, when the guy who's coming into your living room saying, hey, we're going to make you, is introducing you to this guy, you trust him. But what's done is done. He paid back the money. He was suspended for one game. And this kid is a 100% football player. He is absolutely going to succeed however the Steelers use him. And I couldn't be happier for him or the Pittsburgh Steelers.
You know, when I look at him on tape, initially, you think to yourself the way this kid flies around the field like a missile, you can't help but think about a Troy Polamalu type player, the way he plays. And, you know, I threw out there, and I didn't get the thought out there well, that this guy could be a potential strong safety, and I meant it more as in the aspects of an in-the-box type strong safety, like we saw Troy Polamalu play a lot last year downside inside the box. Is this guy the new hybrid, anti-hybrid tight end linebacker, more of a nickel package linebacker that's going to come in on third down to combat these running backs and all? Is that kind of how you see Spence in that mold?
It's possible. I mean, you know, Sean made his bread and butter by being an outside linebacker because there is nobody I've seen in half a decade or more that goes sideline to sideline faster than him. I mean, that's how he got it done. And he had to step in to the middle last year out of need for the Miami Hurricanes. Where the Steelers are concerned, I'm not 100% sure that he's fast enough right now to be a strong safety over the middle. Now, that being said, you know, when kids make the leap to the National Football League and, you know, they're football 24-7, they're not worried about tests and study halls and all the distractions of campus. You never know what they can do with him. But the thing I love is that you know that they're going to maximize his potential because that's what the Pittsburgh Steelers do. They look at, they're in love with linebackers and they're in love with developing linebackers and using them in different ways. And I think, you know, when they saw something in this kid, they saw instinct, they saw football IQ, and they saw the kind of kid that I think they feel is versatile that can make an instant impact in special teams. So I think what they'll do is they'll get him on the field, they'll show him the playbook, they'll see how he can do as an inside linebacker behind Timmons. If they feel like, you know, he's not getting big enough, fast enough, maybe they do turn him over to special teams. Or maybe, you know, maybe, Dave, he's just a special teamer in the first year to get out on the field and make some hits and be an impact player. And little by little, as we've seen a lot of the Pittsburgh linebackers over the years, little by little, they get themselves out onto the field due to an injury, and oftentimes they don't leave the field.
Yeah, and you know what's intriguing? You look at his time speed of 4.64. He plays much faster than that, you know, and you look at his 20-yard shuttle time of 4.32. He plays faster than that, you know, as far as his agility goes. I mean, he's as agile as somebody to run a 4.1 shuttle, and he's as fast to me on tape as somebody runs a high 4.4 or 4.5. And I mean, he's always around the football, and I think that's what Mike Tomlin said in the post game in the press conference yesterday that wrapped up the draft and all. And I, you know, using the term strong safety once again, you know, that's bad on my part as much as a hybrid nickel linebacker. And I think this kid, if he does take, you know, even though Keith Butler had said in his press conference that this is a guy that's probably not going to see the field in year one, if he's as smart as what you say and what some of the scouts are saying with him, there could be some situations where we see him on third downs inside where you pull someone like a Larry Foote off the field, yeah. move Timmons over, and then put Spence here on the weak side inside. Would you agree?
Well, listen, first of all, they're going to have to do something with him because you know how it is. You get put on the practice squad or you're not – put in a position to produce, you'll be sucked up like a vacuum cleaner. So I believe at the very worst he'll see the field as a special teamer, but he is a brilliant player, and I want to go back to something you talked about. I think, you know, everybody has their opinions on the combine and 4.4 and 4.3 and 4.5. I think running backs 40 times are important. I think receivers 40 times are important. Linebackers, it is important, but Dave, I'm going to go back to what I talked about before. When you know how to get from point A to point B better than anybody else, and in my opinion, in my years of covering the ACC, a Luke Kuechly of Boston College might be right there with Sean Spence. He was a first-round pick. When you have the ability to get from point A to point B as fast as possible, it doesn't matter what your 40 time is. And that's why I brought up Zach Thomas for the Miami Dolphins. Zach Thomas's 40 time, I don't know what it is, but he's probably still waiting to cross the finish line. He was not a fast linebacker, but his instincts and his ability to know the path, to anticipate, know where that ball is going and get there as fast as possible, is a lot greater than some of the other linebackers who may have run a 4.4 or a 4.5 but didn't have that instinct. And I said this from the very beginning. Sean didn't lift very much at the combine. His 40 time wasn't all that impressive. And people were calling up my radio show saying, I don't get it. How can this guy do that? And I said, he is going to succeed in the National Football League because of his instincts and his ability to go from one side of the field to the other. And when the Pittsburgh Steelers put him in and show him what to do and tell him to go after the ball, they're going to see a kid who belongs on the 53-man roster and a kid who, in my opinion, you know how it is, Dave, when they bring a linebacker in and they put him behind somebody, in 3 years, one of these great linebackers they have is going to want too much money. And inevitably, because of the salary cap, they're going to have to part with one of them, and you got to make sure you have someone behind them. So I think Sean Spence could see the field a little bit in year one. He'll definitely be a special teamer, and I absolutely am 100% sold on him succeeding in the National Football League.
That's a pretty good endorsement, too. And you definitely, like I said, looking at it on film, the kid is all over the field there. You know, outside of Spence here, and you know, you being a Steelers fan, and I know you don't cover the Florida Gators. Chris Rainey was kind of an interesting name, of course. University of Florida. You know, you of course, you know about quite a few of their players down there. Rainey, sure. Tell me your thoughts about Rainey and you know him to his time, you know, spending with the Pouncey Twins, and evidently the Steelers got a full endorsement from the Pouncey family as a whole on him. But tell me what you know about Chris Rainey.
Well, listen, what I know is that the kid is faster than the speed of light. I mean, he's a superhero with speed. He just needs to be more organized between the ears, plain and simple. I mean, he's the kind of kid that when the Pittsburgh Steelers look at him, they think kick returner. They think a guy who's a game breaker. And while Antonio Brown obviously did a great job with punt returns, it's very possible that Chris Rainey could be the kick returner this year. And That's just flat-out speed, Dave. That's all there is. I mean, you're looking at a kid. They didn't take him in the first, second, or third round. They took him in a later round. And to be quite honest with you, a guy that's that fast, a guy that was that highly coveted coming out of high school, a guy who started his career playing for Urban Meyer, probably should have been a first or second-day draft pick. The fact that he went later, I believe, is because of the issues that he had off the field and because, you know, the maturity bus went right by him. And I think, you know, he's a good person to take a flyer on, especially where they took him. The Steelers will have somebody returning kicks this year regardless, and if he is it, they are going to have a blazing kid. And he just needs some instruction, you know. When he shows up at the mini camps, I'm hopeful that the Steelers will have somebody, you know, someone like an Emmanuel Sanders or an Antonio Brown, a young but impressionable type of guy who can pull him aside and say, look, you know, college is one thing. This is the pros. We're young guys, and we're already making an impact. And if he can just follow them, Dave, I really think this kid can make the team, and I think he can be a very special tool for the Steelers in the return game.
And, you know, the Steelers last year had carried six wide receivers. With Arnez Battle, it's hard to throw Arnez Battle into that because he was such a more of a special teams guy. Realistically, Chris Rainey, you know, the Steelers usually have one or two positions that could go many ways depending on where a kid fits on special teams. And I think Rainey could be that guy, kind of the specialist, kind of like Stephon Logan was a few years ago for the Steelers. You know, kind of a return guy, kind of jack of all trades type thing. Of course, I think Rainey has much more upside than Stephon Logan with what you can do with lining him up in the slot and in the backfield and returns and all. And heck, how many punts did this kid block too? You know, this guy could be a huge contributor on special teams. So I'm with you, John, that I think there's, you know, if this kid has his head screwed on tight, I think he's got a great opportunity of making a 53-man roster.
I do, and what separates him from Stephon Logan, who was the human joystick, was fun to watch, but he was not a great receiver. He was just a guy who could return kicks. Chris Rainey's a hell of a receiver. I mean, this kid can catch the ball. He's not a one-dimensional guy. Now, granted, you know, if Wallace gets his act together and Brown and Emmanuel Sanders, I don't know how often, you know, Chris Rainey would see the field anyway, but he's the kind of guy that you can throw the football to. I never really felt that Stephon Logan was a guy who was going to make a third and eight catch. You know, he was a guy that seemed more like he was valuable just for one area. Chris Rainey, you know, when Tebow was here, was a valuable asset. And even with some of the other guys who weren't as good, Chris Rainey was always a weapon for the University of Florida. And there's no question that he could blossom. I mean, one day, Dave, you know, the way the Steelers are, they're collecting receivers right now. You know, it was only a matter of time. You know, one way or another, Mike Wallace is going to have a decision to make. And next year, Antonio Brown's contract will be up and eventually Emmanuel Sanders. And they've got to get somebody, you know, who's sort of on deck, so to speak, because you know how the salary cap works. And there's no question. I don't want people to envision Chris Rainey like Stephon Logan because they're both fast. Chris Rainey's a hell of a receiver, too. And if he just can mature a little bit and follow in the footsteps of these other great young Steeler receivers, he could absolutely be part of the stable and possibly maybe a slot guy in the future.
Absolutely. I would agree with that. I watched some film last night on him. He is very good about getting lost through the middle of the line of scrimmage and sneaking out into the flat there as a dump-off. And once he gets the ball in his hands, He's tough. I mean, no, it's hard to find much film on him where he takes a square pop, you know.
Right.
And, you know, he's real greasy type of kid
right.
that gets right. away. So he definitely is an exciting guy. I'm just using Stephon Logan as a comparison as far as a roster spot went. I think Rainey is that times 10 with the tools.
Yeah, and keep in mind, Dave, of who Rainey has been going against. I mean, you know, Stephon Logan was going against smaller schools. Chris Rainey was going against LSU and Alabama and Tennessee and you know, Florida State. And those are the teams on his schedule. And, I mean, I apologize if I'm leaving anybody out, but when it comes to secondary and imposing defenses, especially, you know, where receivers roam in college football, I'm sorry, but Alabama, LSU, they possess the absolute best. And this guy, even though Florida was not a better team, this guy for the last few years has been making plays on, in my opinion, the best guys in the secondary in college football. And you're right, he doesn't take square hits. I mean, he knows how to find open space. He knows how to take advantage of his speed. As long as he's keeping it together off the field, he can be a valuable asset on the field. There's no question about it.
I'm wrapping up here with John Linder on the Terrible Podcast today. You can follow John on Twitter, Linder WQAM,
yes.
Right?
Linder WQAM. I have a million Dolphin fans who follow me and maybe five Steeler fans, but the Steelers is people down here know it. They know the Steelers is where my heart is. I count the Super Bowl rings for everybody down here on a regular basis. But, you know, it's just incredible the fact that between Pouncey and between Gilbert and now Rainey and, of course, Sean Spence, that the Steelers are now dipping into the state of Florida a little bit. We didn't used to see that very often. I can count on one hand. I know Warren Williams went to the University of Miami, and I can't even – Najee Davenport went to Miami, and outside of that, I can't think of a Hurricane that has been on the Steelers. So it was pretty cool. I know he's happy. I know that one of the beat reporters for the University of Miami sent out a tweet that Sean Spence was drafted by his dream team. So he obviously had a soft spot for the Steelers before this even happened, and it's going to be incredible. Now, he wore 31 in college, and I think, was that Mike Logan's number?
Yes, it was.
Back in the day? I don't know if it's occupied now, but he might try to go get that. I'm not sure. I'm not sure if they'll give it to him.
you got to talk to Mike Adams at one time, too, don't
yeah.
you? Why don't you tell us what you know about Mike Adams?
Well, I got to talk to Mike Adams before he had any issues. The Miami Hurricanes were playing Ohio State a couple years ago, and I had a chance to talk to him for my radio show. And, you know, it's hard to gauge. You know, obviously the kid has made some mistakes, but he was such a valuable asset for Terrell Pryor and that offensive line. And there's no question in my mind. You think about it this way. I mean, he was going anyway, and whether the Steelers took him or not, for a guy to have – the issues that he did and still be taken in the second round. And if the Steelers didn't take him, somebody in the next five or six slots would have. He has so much upside. He is absolutely an NFL caliber player today. And I don't know necessarily at this point, I'm not, you know, eyeball deep in Steeler news, you know, in terms of what's going on in the mini camp, but this guy is absolutely going to push. My guess is that he'll see the field a little bit in year one. I don't know necessarily what's happening on the right side right now, but I see him as a right side of the line guy. And, you know, Gilbert will obviously be in there with Pouncey and DeCastro's. My hope is that they make him a left tackle. I'm not sure what they inevitably want to do with him, but this kid is the real deal. I thought the Steelers really nailed it with their first two picks, and I'm sure nobody's happier than Ben Roethlisberger. I guarantee you that.
Yeah, there was a report this morning in one of the Altoona papers, I think, interview, and Ben is not upset at all with what transpired in the draft here. And, of course, when you get into the fourth round and they traded up to get Alameda Ta'amua from Washington, you thought we called Casey Hampton Big Snack. You know, you call this guy full course dinner. You know, at one time this kid weighed 390 pounds. Now, of course, they'll have to get him on some, you know, the big thing is his weight. But, you know, Garrett Guimont's going to get him on the nutrition program and get him back around probably around 340. But overall, it was a good draft. And just want to wrap up, what were your overall thoughts on the Steelers draft as we close you out here?
I really loved it. You know, the Steelers have, I tell people down here in Miami all the time, I said, you know, where Pittsburgh sports is concerned, you can question a lot of things, but I will never, ever question the Steelers draft. You know, once in a great while, a Lima Sweet comes along and you don't know what the heck happened. But outside of that, they're absolute geniuses. The only team that's on par with them is the New England Patriots. When they go double tight end with, you know, Gronkowski and Hernandez, and people are like, what are they going with two tight ends? Hey, the Steelers went with Woodley and Timmons in the same year. You know, it's called seeing what you want, having a vision for it. You know, they get Sticky Hood, they come around with with Cam Hayward, who, by the way, I used to play pool with his father in the Pitt Student Union back in the mid-'80s. Craig Hayward was a upperclassman when I was a freshman at Pitt, and he and I used to play pool together back at the University of Pittsburgh in the Student Union. So I got to know him a little bit, and I'm really proud of his son. You know, he's come a long way as well. I know he's really proud to be a Pittsburgh Steeler. I've talked to him a couple times on Twitter, and I just think the Steelers have great direction, and I'm glad that they're finally, you know, going to get some upper crust in the offensive line. Those guys have done an okay job up to now, but, you know, with Marquise Pouncey and Gilbert and now DeCastro's in there and you know, the kid from Ohio State, they're really building an empire at offensive line, and when that empire solidifies, and Ben doesn't have to run for his life all the time, it's going to, a couple more Super Bowl rings are coming. There's no question about it.
That makes me feel good. I think a lot of Steeler Nation agree with you too, John. Hey, you're a friend of mine on Twitter. We've been in touch for a while now. You did a great job at the Miami Pro Day. You were the one that got the word out of the huge contingent that the Steelers had down there, and now we kind of know why. With the selection of Spence being one of those. I know they were probably looking at a few other kids down there as well. But listeners, if you get a chance, make sure you follow John on Twitter at Linder, WQAM. He covers the Miami Hurricanes. He's on the radio down there talking all Miami sports. So if you're a Hurricanes fan or just want a good Steeler fan to follow in general, John's your guy. So, John, thanks for coming in on the Terrible Podcast today, and we'll be catching up with you soon.
You got it, Dave. No problem. Anytime.